Hey guys, this is an interview we did with Bishop Olmsted, who at the time was the Bishop of the Diocese of Phoenix. He's now Bishop Emeritus. But he talks about the importance of the liturgy, of fatherhood, of the pro-life movement, of what true masculinity is, and we wanted to share it with you. But this episode is really brought to you by Catholic-owned, which is the source to find vetted Catholic-owned businesses of all kinds. So whether you're looking for a plumber or a real estate agent, or you're a business owner yourself and you want to target other Catholics to promote your business, this is the place to do it. It features local and national companies, goods and services, business to business, business to customer. You'll find a ton of companies right there, right now, by downloading free Catholic-owned app. Join us as we build a new Catholic economy and use the referral code CATHOLICMAN to sign up. That's CATHOLICMAN at sign up so they know that we sent you. You can go to CatholicOwned.com or just download the app in your app store right now. It's free, Catholic-owned app. Go check it out and let's support other Catholic companies. And if you are a business owner, get your business put on Catholic-owned. Go to CatholicOwned.com.
All right, so this is David and Adam, a special edition of the Catholic Man Show here with His Excellency Bishop Olmsted of the Diocese of Phoenix. Bishop, thank you for sitting down with us, taking some time to meet with us. We just finished the 2020 Catholic Fellowship of Phoenix Men's Conference.
Exactly.
I think I got the title right.
You got the title right, and we're so glad to have you here to be an important part of it.
It was a great day. I think they said about 1,100 men, 1,000 men, somewhere in that ballpark were here today, so it was a great turnout.
Tons of confessions were heard today.
Yes.
We get to celebrate Holy Mass together. Mm-hmm. It was an awesome day. The speakers were phenomenal. We had some great speaker lineups. The Q&A session, Bishop, let me tell you, the Q&A session was, the questions that we received were very, there was depth to them. They weren't just, kind of scratch the surface Catholic questions. I mean, there were some really good questions in there.
Yeah, I was able to, after hearing confessions for 3 hours, I was able to hear the last part of that. And they were questions that would come from men who are really living their faith and wanting to grow to even deeper effectiveness or witness, I think, for their faith.
Yeah. That's what I sensed, a yearning to not only grow deeper, but to give it to others.
Yeah, and I was struck, too, even by questions that had to do with the sacred liturgy, with reverence, a sense of the sacred that's there. And I think that's important for men. I think, there's something about the liturgy being done beautifully and with a real sense of reverence that's good for us and that it's a witness that men can give for their children and for their wives and others in the parish as well. So I was glad to hear those questions today.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of have been branded a little bit as a bishop for men. You're like, when you wrote Into the Breach, the apostolic exhortation, it kind of puts you into that vein, like, oh, here's a guy who really gets men's ministry. What is it about what you're doing as a bishop that is why are men responding to what you're doing in the diocese?
Well, first of all, I think that our society has been targeting men, belittling men, making fun of men in all kinds of ways that's still very much going on. And there's very little in society in terms of the secular society, but even in the church we've been, I think, lacking in lifting up the real mission and identity and dignity and greatness of men. We have a very important witness. There's several things in that regard that really struck me. There was a book that was written by David Blankenhorn called Fatherless America, written like 30 years ago. And as soon as I saw the title, I said, this guy gets it. This is exactly what we have happening. And when I came to the Diocese of Phoenix, the man who at that time was head of Catholic Men's Fellowship here, he came up to me and says, what would you say in one word you're going to have a concern about in the Diocese of Phoenix? And I said, fatherhood. Mm. And so that's been a concern for a long time for me. I've also been moved by God to be very involved with pro-life activities because I was ordained a priest in the year that Roe versus Wade happened.
Really?
1973. So it seemed to me that God was ordaining me precisely 6 months after Roe versus Wade. In January and July, I was ordained a priest. And there's been a great effort by many to silence the voice of men with regard to unborn children.
Yes, yes.
But what are men supposed to be? They're supposed to be the protectors. It's exactly what we should not be silent about. But there was so much shaming of men who tried to be engaged in that and efforts to silence men that they actually succeeded in many ways. But we can't let that happen, because if we do, we're denying one essential part of the mission of a man. We have to be concerned about protecting, especially when it's based on the dignity of the most vulnerable, most innocent, and the best thing for a woman who's pregnant with a child is to help her be a mother. That's exactly what her vocation is as soon as she has a child within her womb. And who should help her and help her to be encouraged to do that but men?
Yeah, specifically the father.
Yeah.
You're right. The pro-life issue and fatherhood, they're almost the same.
And St. Joseph is such a great example.
Yes.
So Mary's with child. He's troubled. He thinks he has to divorce her according to the Jewish law. He doesn't want to do anything in any way but he doesn't want to break the law. So he's just, but he's trying to be kind. So there's a lot of tough questions around pro-life issues.
Yeah.
But it's a time when if we take the time, even if we can't see in the beginning clearly, God will show us. And I think what we see like in today's conference is men want to know. And they want to be engaged. Mm-hmm. And I'm encouraged again today, as I have been other times, by all ages of those being here today, and those who bring their sons and their grandsons. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful, beautiful sight. So I've been very concerned about fatherhood, men's roles for quite a long time.
It was beautiful, like you said, to see multi-generational men there today. I was looking out there today, and I actually saw in one of the front rows, I could tell it was the grandpa, the dad, and the son right there, and I was like, "Yes, that's what it's all about." That was an example set by the grandpa and the father to raise their son, bring him, and say, "This is what's important to me." That we, on a Saturday, that we sacrifice a Saturday away to come together with men to grow closer to our Lord.
Exactly. And some of those, like I just met Victor, and he had his 17-year-old son today, whose name is Elijah Micah. Now, if those aren't strong prophets' names.
Talk about an intentional name right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So here, Victor is bringing Elijah Micah to a men's conference, so he'll be even more encouraged to live his vocation.
Yeah.
For me, that's such a gift.
Yeah, and Adam, you said sacrifice a Saturday. It's not even a sacrifice for a grandfather, a father, and a son
to be together.
That's not a sacrifice. That's awesome.
It's just showing like this is important to us.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's a if you do anything, you're sacrificing something.
Right.
You know, you can't do all things.
Sure.
So you give up something no matter what you do. But
it's exactly the kind of witness we need, because society is individualizing us. We live in an individualistic society.
Right.
But to have grandfather, father, and son together at a men's conference, that's good not only for today, but it'll strengthen their bonds within their families, conversations with their wives and their sisters, and it'll be a great, great impact within the family.
Yeah, Bishop, when Adam and I were very, very young, our dad started taking us to the Oklahoma Men's Conference. Mm-hmm. We went to the very first one, and we went to I think I've missed three, and Adam's only missed two. And so I think, what is it, the 23rd, 24th?
24th.
24th year. They have it. So I can just, I can testify personally to the effect on a young boy when their father every year takes him to a men's conference. It gets to the point where this is just what you do.
It's a tradition.
Exactly.
It's not, oh, do you want to go? No, it's like, we always go. So even in college when I stopped practicing my faith, I still went. because that's what you do, And it was like, oh, good. I will go to confession this year. you know, like, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
It was good that I did that.
Yeah.
But it was
traditions within a family really have deep roots within us.
Yeah, especially for men.
And we know we're betraying something if we don't carry on that tradition, mm-hmm. especially if it's built in goodness and truth. It's something very powerful about it.
Yeah, yeah. So what is it that is missing in just, you know, take, let's not just say like the average person, but let's say you have a practicing Catholic, you know, living their life well. I think most of our audience falls into that category. What is it that maybe is missing from the average practicing Catholic's home life or something that they could do more of? Do you have any advice for really cultivating the domestic church within the home, almost, you know, how to celebrate the liturgy at home better?
Well, one of the things I would strongly recommend is real attentiveness to eating together. There's fast food mm-hmm. and a fast pace of life, sadly, has meant that there's fewer families eating together. And that makes a big difference in a home because so much happens when you gather around the table. And if the family's attentive to eating together and putting cell phones aside and not being able to be touched during the meal, it's very counterculture in the best of ways because it's pro-culture that's really building and binding people together within a family. Mm-hmm. So that would be one of the things I would lift up right away.
Yeah.
Family prayer, of course, is very, very important.
Sure.
There's something powerful about a family praying together. And, you know, even... Like, I remember my family when we prayed the rosary together. I had one brother who could do the first half of a Hail to Jesus in at least about a half, second and a half. You just, the only two words you could really make out is Hail and Jesus. But, you know, he did his decade, and we all did our decades.
It was, right.
So we don't forget that, but we were all kneeling down together in the front of the dresser in my parents' room where we had the Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart of Mary statues and three candles, which we all race to blow out when the...
It's my turn!
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Candles are a big deal for little kids.
Oh, yeah.
Big
know.
Deal.
Yeah. Yes.
We had
yes.
wax spread all over everything for people yep. blowing at the
yeah.
same time.
Yeah, we got a candle snuffer at our house, which is actually even more fun to put out a candle with a candle snuffer.
You've moved up scale.
Yeah. Oh, we fancy.
Bishop, I have a question that kind of piggybacking off of that last question. I have three boys. I have a 6-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 2-month-old boy. I have a daughter as well, but specifically talking about raising boys. The culture is attacking them. Even at 6 years old, you know, my 6-year-old, I have to worry about who my son is playing with outside, what they're doing, who he's associating with that may have an iPad or phone or something yeah. like that that I don't want my kids being a part of. How do I raise my sons to practice their faith, to make sure that we're all on the same page, you know, to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing to get them to heaven.
Right. Well, the first thing I would say is you want to love their mother.
Absolutely. Mm.
And you want to show your affection for their mother. Mm-hmm. There's something really powerful about children seeing their parents loving each other and knowing, and never even entering their mind, that they don't love each other. That is such an incredible security for kids. And when they see that security and they don't see it in other places, which inevitably they will not see it in other places in the same way, it gives them a confidence that even when they don't like what you say, because it's what they need to hear,
right?
There must be something I need to listen here. I mean, eventually that will come forward. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I would say is love their mother and together with her, you know, at times talk through how will we best raise these sons together. So that would be the first place I would say that's there. And then I think it's important that there be activities that the father does with his sons. I think there's important father does special things with his daughters too. Mm-hmm. But there are some really important things. So finding time to be with your sons. And if you have ones that are close in age. In my family, I was the third of three boys, and we were 1 year apart. So I did everything with my older brothers. Mm-hmm. So I was always playing on the sports teams that were older than me, I didn't mind. I was praying with my brothers, and it really was a privilege to be able to do that. And my father was always there. He was coaching. My grandfather was the assistant coach with their little baseball team.
That's awesome.
All those kind of things. So I think the activities are important for guys. Outdoor activities are really helpful for them. So those will be a few ideas.
I like that. Chopping wood is a great one for, like, I can chop the wood, and my boys now can pick up the wood and stack it. Mm-hmm. And, like, that
which
is
that not easy to do because it can be heavy. And, like,
oak is heavy. Oak is a heavy wood.
And hard to hold.
Right.
Sometimes.
But it burns a lot of energy, and mom is very happy when we come inside and the boys don't have as much energy inside.
Exactly.
Also, it feels good in your soul to chop wood.
It does. There's something about
it. Just like, I am a man. I have chopped this wood with the strength of my back God gave me. You know, just like.
It's good to have guy activities. Because in my family, we lived on a farm, so we milk cows every single morning.
So you've chopped wood.
We did all kinds of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember when the guys would go out and find the cedar tree that we would cut down for the Christmas time. There was all these men's activities that we did together.
Yeah.
Every time it rained, we went fishing in the summer.
If it rained, you went fishing.
Because you couldn't do farm work. So we would go fishing.
And you know what? Sometimes the fish, it's actually a good time to fish. When
exactly.
It rains. Yeah.
It's an excellent time to go fishing.
Like all the rain oxygenates the water.
That's when they're biting.
Right.
Yeah.
And nobody else is there.
Exactly.
Yeah, except for you guys.
And then we did a lot of hunting, especially in the fall and in the winter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a lot of man activities that was fun to do with my father and with my brothers.
I will just tell you that when I come inside from chopping wood, be it reality or not, in my mind, I've never looked so handsome in the eyes of my wife. You know, like, I feel like I look better after chopping wood. Like, I don't know if you saw me, honey, but I was chopping wood. Like, you know what I mean? I was just outside being a man.
Yeah.
I assume you were watching through the window the whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I think for us psychologically, I think physical exercise and competitive exercise, when it's done healthily, It does. It just clears everything else out of our heads, and we're happier.
Yeah.
We are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
And there's just so many things. Like, we live in a fake world. You know what I mean? Like, everything. Like, I have.
John Sr. talks about this a lot.
I have thousands of Facebook friends. But they're not friends. I'm not friends with these people. It's a lie. It's all, and it's like, lie is a strong word, but it sort of is, know. Like, you're not really friends with these people. You don't even know who some of them are. A lot of them. You don't even know who you are, who they are, and how you became friends with them in the first place. Friends, so to speak.
Right.
You know, so, like, there's just these activities, chopping wood, fishing, that connect us again with reality, and that the fact that there is a world around us that's real and not digital and illuminated on a screen.
And when you're cutting wood, you're probably doing it in a way that the whole family will enjoy because you're going to be using this wood.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a way that it's also just in making the quality of life in the family better as well. I mean, it's just a healthy thing to do. Those real relationships are being nurtured by that. Mm-hmm.
I think if men would chop wood every day, there'd be more children in this world.
Maybe so.
It could be.
From wives watching them do it through the window.
I think that as a father, obviously, the prayer life is critical. And making sure that you have a regimented prayer life is critical. Like I said, it is very extremely important, especially if you're going to lead your family, you have to have a strong prayer life. Similarly, you have to lead all the priests in your diocese, so you have to probably have a strong prayer life. What is a day of prayer life look like for you? Like, you wake up, how does your day look in prayer?
Well, I nearly always begin the day with an hour of adoration. So it depends when I have my first Mass. Most frequently I have a 6:15 Mass, so I usually get up around 4. So I have time for adoration and then get ready for Mass. For me, that's by far the most important thing. Since my first year being ordained a priest, I've done an hour of adoration every day. And it just... I mean, if I'm anchored with my beloved who called me by name to be his, everything else goes better. And then there's a prayer of abandonment written by Charles de Foucault, who's a very dear to me. And so it begins with Father, ends with Father, and you surrender everything to him. So I always pray that during my hour of adoration. So I surrender everything to him during the day. Some of the things I'm very conscious of, because I don't know how in the world I'm going to deal with this problem and this person and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of unexpected things I know are going to come along. They're going to be challenging. But I know I've given it to him. I've invited him to be there. I've surrendered my life to him. So that makes a big difference for me. The rest of my days are very different from day to day. There's so many different activities you do as a bishop.
Right.
So many different kinds of people that you're meeting with. Mm-hmm. So the beginning of the day is really, really important for me. But I always try to find time for midday prayer and evening prayer as well, because just turning to the Beloved during the day, you know, it becomes a habit. Sometimes you're kind of zonked out, or you're really worried about something, so your attention is pretty spacey. Mm-hmm. But we're doing it for him, and he's the one that makes it fruitful, not me.
Right.
So that's kind of how my days go.
Do you mind if I ask you, when you're doing an hour of adoration, what is it that you do during that hour? Because the reason I'm asking is I have a couple adoration hours a week, and in the beginning especially, I found it difficult not to do something, whether read a book, mm-hmm. you know, pray the rosary. Just to sit there in silence was very, very hard. And even 5 minutes of it was a struggle, you know. And I don't know, like, that's a long, you know, backdrop. What is it that you do in adoration?
Well, the main thing I do in adoration is really to surrender to him. So I begin, I have a little tiny prayer stool so I can sit very low before the Lord. And I want my body to help me to be just with him, before him, surrendering to him. And I don't really measure so much how long. I just do that in quiet. And the main words are from the prayer of abandonment. The other words I love is from the Jesus prayer, which, you know, when you breathe in, you say Jesus, inviting him into your life, and mercy when you breathe out.
Yeah.
And I use that throughout the day and the night. If I can't sleep at night, that's what I do. Every breath I take in, I say Jesus, and every breath that I breathe out, I say mercy. So that his mercy flows out. That's just a gentling kind of thing, being in his presence. Then I usually do, within the hour, I'll usually do morning prayer and often the office of readings. But I never rush them through. I guess my conviction is that I'm the guest. He's the host. He will feed me what I need. I need to use whatever makes me attentive to him, surrendering to him. And the Word of God for me, especially because I'm sent to preach the good news, it feeds me so much. In the last, like, 10 to 15 years, I sometimes take a little pen and just kind of little check mark against something really speaking to my heart that day. My prayer books are getting all checked. But, you know, I may come back the next year and I can't figure out how that said anything to me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'll do that sometimes. I'll read something and it's like, why did I underline this in the Bible?
Yeah.
I have no idea. But I did at the time.
It's a living word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what it is, a living word. You know, so it's much more than just what the ink does on the page.
Right.
Jesus is present in that living word. And we're, with all our heart, desiring to be present to him. So I don't worry really too much about what I do within it, except I try never to rush it. As long as I can just quietly be there in his presence. The word Father is extremely important, because I think we need to always be deepening our appreciation of being a beloved son of the Father. Mm. So that's kind of...
It sounds very leisurely.
Yeah, I rest in his presence.
Yeah.
Teresa of Avila said, I waste time with him. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. My last question. We've taken up more time than we bargained for, but I just... briefly talk about the importance of having a relationship with our mother as a father. And when I say my mother, the Virgin Mary.
Yes.
Father Parks gave a great homily today at Mass, and one of his third point was making sure to have a relationship with Mary, our mother. So the importance of having that relationship.
Yeah. Well, I'm very blessed because my mother's still living. She's 98.
Awesome.
She's
praise God.
Yes.
She still drives her truck.
She has a truck.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We never had a truck until 3 years ago when she wanted to get a truck. She rides her exercise bike every day.
Uh-huh.
She's the sacristan in the church. So I'm blessed with she's been a woman of deep faith and great joy. So a huge blessing in my life. I also have three sisters.
Oh, awesome.
Who are a blessing for me. So I've been blessed with a sense of ease with the women in my life and experienced always great love from them. So it's been very easy for me to have a devotion to Our Lady. Mm-hmm. So when I was in about seventh grade, I believe, I made a promise to a sister I'd say the rosary every day. And so that's been a really wonderful gift for me to do that. And, you know, I say the rosary when I'm driving the car. I say the rosary. I do a lot of hiking here in Arizona. It's a great place to hike.
Mm-hmm.
So I pray the rosary during that, as well as the Divine Mercy Chaplet. So the rosary is, the structure is it can seem cumbersome if you're not really used to it. But if you just trust that it's really linked with the life of Jesus, and Mary always leads us to Jesus, and she always intercedes for us constantly, that she'll make it fruitful. So she's our mother. Mm-hmm. Jesus gave her to us to be our mother. And there's a more humanness there in a way than God the Father, because we only know the Father through the Son. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really helpful for us to have a great devotion to Our Lady. I've always loved Our Lady of Guadalupe. She's the patroness of our diocese here. Mm.
And of the Americas, you know.
And of the Americas, and for pro-life. I mean, she totally turned around a society that was killing the children because they thought it was the only way they could survive as a culture.
Right.
And so what a great patron for pro-life activities today. So, yeah, so I'm so grateful that Jesus gave us his mother.
Do you have a patron saint?
I do.
Who is it?
St. Thomas More.
Nice.
Yeah, St. Thomas More, I love the fact that he was a man of conscience. I read a book called Conscience Decides in 1967 when I was in the seminary. And it was mostly his letters to Meg and then other writings of Thomas More. Meg was his daughter, of course. And I think that to this day, the need to have a witness to conscience being critical to live a life of integrity is so badly needed. And our society doesn't have a proper understanding of freedom. It has a false understanding of truth, doesn't even believe in truth now in relativism. And consciences so often are used to excuse us rather than to be formed to help us be strong and good witnesses of Jesus. So Thomas More is very important to me. Yeah.
Well, pray for us.
Yes. Bishop, thank you so much for your leadership. Thank you, not only in your own diocese, but I know you're active in the USCCB. You've been just a staunch believer in pro-life, and I'm just so grateful for your leadership. Thank you so much.
You are a good bishop.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pray for me, and I'll be praying for you. And thanks for using the media to promote the gospel.
Thank you so much.